And it has. But not before we were able to take measures, thanks to the incident of the mule.
What sort of crisis? One that threatens us with destruction? I can't believe that. You held off the Empire, the mule, and Seychelles. You have a group consciousness that can pluck a ship out of space at a distance of millions of kilometers. What can you have to fear? Look at Bliss. She doesn't look the least bit perturbed. She doesn't think there's a crisis. Bliss had placed one shapely leg over the arm of the chair and wriggled her toes at him.
Of course I'm not worried, Trev. You'll handle it.
Trev said forcefully, Me? Dom said,
Gaia has brought you here by means of 100 gentle manipulations. It is you who must face our crisis.
Trev stared at him, and slowly his face turned from stupefaction into gathering rage.
Me? Why, in all of space, me? I have nothing to do with this. Nevertheless, Trev, said Dom, with an almost hypnotic calmness, you, only you, in all of space, only you.
Chapter 18. Collision. 75. Storjendabal was edging toward Gaia almost as cautiously as Trevise had, and now that its star was a perceptible disk and could be viewed only through strong filters, he paused to consider. Suranovi sat to one side, looking up at him now and then in a timorous manner. She said softly,
Master?
What is it, Novi? He asked abstractedly.
Are you unhappy?
He looked up at her quickly.
No, concerned. Remember that word? I am trying to decide whether to move in quickly or to wait longer. Shall I be very brave, Novi?
I think you are very brave all times, Master.
To be very brave is sometimes to be foolish. Novi smiled.
How can a master scholar be foolish? That is a son, is it not, Master?
She pointed to the screen. Jendabal nodded. Novi said, after an irresolute pause,
Is it the sun that shines on Trantor? Is it the Hamish sun?
Jendabal said, No, Novi, it is a far different sun. There are many suns, billions of them.
Ah, I had known this with my head. I could not make myself believe, however. How is it, Master, that one can know with the head and yet not believe?
Jendabal smiled faintly.
In your head, Novi, he began,
and automatically, as he said that, he found himself in her head. He stroked it gently, as he always did when he found himself there, just a soothing touch of mental tendrils to keep her calm and untroubled. And he would then have left again, as he always did, had not something drawn him back. What he sensed was indescribable in any but mentalic terms, but, metaphorically, Novi's brain glowed. It was the faintest possible glow. It would not be there, except for the existence of a mentalic field imposed from without, a mentalic field of intensity so small that the finest receiving function of Jendabal's own well-trained mind could just barely detect it, even against the utter smoothness of Novi's mentalic structure. He said sharply,
Novi, how do you feel?
Her eyes opened wide.
I feel well, Master.
Are you dizzy, confused? Close your eyes and sit absolutely still until I say now.
Obediently, she closed her eyes. Carefully, Jendabal brushed away all extraneous sensations from her mind, quieted her thought, soothed her emotions, stroked, stroked. He felt nothing but the glow, and it was so faint that he could almost persuade himself it was not there.
Now, he said, and Novi opened her eyes. How do you feel, Novi?
Very calm, Master. Rested.
It was clearly too feeble for it to have any noticeable effect on her. He turned to the computer and wrestled with it. He had to admit to himself that he and the computer did not mesh very well together. Perhaps it was because he was too used to using his mind directly to be able to work through an intermediary. But he was looking for a ship, not a mind, and the initial search could be done more efficiently with the help of the computer. And he found the sort of ship he suspected might be present. It was 500,000 kilometers away, and it was much like his own in design, but it was much larger and more elaborate. Once it was located with the computer's help, Jendabal could allow his mind to take over directly. He sent it outward, tight-beamed, and with it felt, or the mentalic equivalent of felt, the ship inside and out. He then sent his mind toward the planet Gaia, approaching it more closely by several millions of kilometers of space, and withdrew. Neither process was sufficient in itself to tell him unmistakably which, if either, was the source of the field.
He said, Novi, I would like you to sit next to me for what is to follow.
Master, is there danger?
You are not to be in any way concerned, Novi. I will see to it that you are safe and secure.
Master, I am not concerned that I be safe and secure. If there is danger, I want to be able to help you.
Jendabal softened. He said,
Novi, you have already helped. Because of you, I became aware of a very small thing it was important to be aware of. Without you, I might have blundered rather deeply into a bog and might have had to pull out only through a great deal of trouble.
Have I done this with my mind, Master, as you once explained?
Asked Novi, astonished. Quite so, Novi. No instrument could have been more sensitive. My own mind is not. It is too full of complexity. Delight filled Novi's face.
I am so grateful I can help.
Jindabaw smiled and nodded, and then subsided into the somber knowledge that he would need other help as well. Something childish within him objected. The job was his. His alone. Yet it could not be his alone. The odds were climbing. 76. On Trantor, Quindoshandis felt the responsibility of first speakerhood resting upon him with a suffocating weight. Since Jendabal's ship had vanished into the darkness beyond the atmosphere, he had called no meetings of the table. He had been lost in his own thoughts. Had it been wise to allow Jendabal to go off on his own? Jendabal was brilliant, but not so brilliant that it left no room for overconfidence. Jendabal's great fault was arrogance. Ashandis's own great fault, he thought bitterly, was the weariness of age. Over and over again it occurred to him that the precedent of Preem Palver flitting over the galaxy to set things right was a dangerous one. Could anyone else be a Preem Palver? Even Jendabal? And Palver had had his wife with him. To be sure, Jendabal had this Hamish woman, but she was of no consequence. Palver's wife had been a speaker in her own right. Shandis felt himself aging from day to day as he waited for word from Jendabal, and with each day that word did not come, he felt an increasing tension. It should have been a fleet of ships, a flotilla. No, the table would not have allowed it. And yet, when the call finally came, he was asleep, an exhausted sleep that was bringing him no relief. The night had been windy, and he had had trouble falling asleep to begin with. Like a child, he had imagined voices in the wind. His last thoughts, before falling into an exhausted slumber, had been a wistful building of the fancy of resignation, a wish he could do so, together with the knowledge he could not, for at this moment Delarmy would succeed him. And then the call came, and he sat up in bed, instantly awake.
"You are well?"
he said. "Perfectly well, First Speaker," said Jendabal. "Should we have visual connection for more condensed communication?"
"Later, perhaps," said Shandis. "First, what is the situation?"
Jendabal spoke carefully, for he sensed the other's recent arousal, and he perceived a deep weariness. He said, "I am in the neighborhood of an inhabited planet called Gaia, whose existence is not hinted at in any of the galactic records as far as I know."
"The world of those who have been working to perfect the plan? The anti-mules?"
"Possibly, First Speaker. There is the reason to think so. First, the ship bearing Trevise and Pellerat has moved far in toward Gaia and has probably landed there. Second, there is in space about 500,000 kilometers from me a First Foundation warship."
"There cannot be this much interest for no reason."
"First Speaker, this may not be independent interest. I am here only because I am following Trevise, and the warship may be here for the same reason. It remains only to be asked why Trevise is here."
"Do you plan to follow him in toward the planet, Speaker?"
"I had considered that a possibility, but something has come up. I am now 100,000,000 kilometers from Gaia, and I sense in the space about me a mentallic field, a homogeneous one that is excessively faint. I would not have been aware of it at all, but for the focusing effect of the mind of the Hamish woman. It is an unusual mind. I agreed to take her with me for that very purpose."
"You are right, then, in supposing it would be so. Did Speaker Delarmy know this, do you think?"
"When she urged me to take the woman? I scarcely think so, but I gladly took advantage of it, First Speaker."
"I am pleased that you did. Is it your opinion, Speaker Jendabal, that the planet is the focus of the field?"
"To ascertain that, I would have to take measurements at widely spaced points in order to see if there is a general spherical symmetry to the field. My unidirectional mental probe made this seem likely, but not certain. Yet it would not be wise to investigate further in the presence of the First Foundation warship."
"Surely it is no threat."
"It may be. I cannot as yet be sure that it is not itself the focus of the field, First Speaker."
"But they..."
"First Speaker, with respect, allow me to interrupt. We do not know what technological advances the First Foundation has made. They are acting with a strange self-confidence and may have unpleasant surprises for us. It must be decided whether they have learned to handle mentalics by means of some of their devices. In short, First Speaker, I am facing either a warship of mentalics or a planet of them. If it is the warship, then the mentalics may be far too weak to immobilize me, but they might be enough to slow me, and the purely physical weapons on the warship may then suffice to destroy me.
On the other hand, if it is the planet that is the focus, then to have the field detectable at such a distance could mean enormous intensity at the surface, more than even I can handle. In either case, it will be necessary to set up a network, a total network, in which, at need, the full resources of Trantor can be placed at my disposal. The first speaker hesitated.
A total network? This has never been used, never even suggested, except in the time of the Mule.
This crisis may well be even greater than that of the Mule, First Speaker.
I do not know that the table would agree.
I do not think you should ask them to agree, First Speaker. You should invoke a state of emergency.
What excuse can I give?
Tell them what I have told you, First Speaker.
Speaker Delarmy will say that you are an incompetent coward, driven to madness by your own fears.
Jindabaw paused before answering. Then he said, I imagine she will say something like that, First Speaker. But let her say whatever she likes, and I will survive it. What is at stake now is not my pride or self-love, but the actual existence of the Second Foundation. 77. Arla Brano smiled grimly, her lined face setting more deeply into its fleshy crags. She said, I think we can push on with it. I'm ready for them. Cadell said, Do you still feel sure you know what you're doing? If I were as mad as you pretend you think I am, Leono, would you have insisted on remaining on this ship with me? Cadell shrugged and said, Probably. I would then be here on the off chance, Madam Mayor, that I might stop you, divert you, at least slow you before you went too far. And, of course, if you're not mad...
Yes?
Why, then, I wouldn't want to have the histories of the future give you all the mention. Let them state that I was here with you and wonder, perhaps, to whom the credit really belongs, eh, Mayor?
Clever, Leono, clever, but quite futile. I was the power behind the throne through too many mayoralties for anyone to believe I would permit such a phenomenon in my own administration.
We shall see.
No, we won't, for such historical judgments will come after we are dead. However, I have no fears, not about my place in history, and not about that.
And she pointed to the screen. Compor's ship, said Cadell.
Compor's ship, true, said Brano, but without Compor aboard. One of our scout ships observed the changeover. Compor's ship was stopped by another. Two people from the other ship boarded that one, and Compor later moved off and entered the other.
Brano rubbed her hands.
Trevise fulfilled his role perfectly. I cast him out into space in order that he might serve as lightning rod, and so he did. He drew the lightning. The ship that stopped Compor was Second Foundation.
How can you be sure of that, I wonder, said Cadell, taking out his pipe and slowly beginning to pack it with tobacco.
Because I always wondered if Compor might not be under Second Foundation control. His life was too smooth. Things always broke right for him, and he was such an expert at hyperspatial tracking. His betrayal of Trevise might easily have been the simple politics of an ambitious man, but he did it with such unnecessary thoroughness, as though there were more than personal ambition to it.
All guesswork, Mayor.
The guesswork stopped when he followed Trevise through multiple jumps as easily as if there had been but one.
He had the computer to help, Mayor.
But Brano leaned her head back and laughed. My dear Leono, you are so busy devising intricate plots that you forget the efficacy of simple procedures. I sent Compor to follow Trevise, not because I needed to have Trevise followed. What need was there for that? Trevise, however much he might want to keep his movement secret, could not help but call attention to himself in any non-Foundation world he visited. His advanced Foundation vessel, his strong Terminus accent, his Foundation credits, would automatically surround him with a glow of notoriety. And in case of any emergency, he would automatically turn to Foundation officials for help, as he did on Seychelles, where we knew all that he did as soon as he did it, and quite independently of Compor. No, she went on thoughtfully, Compor was sent out to test Compor, and that succeeded, for we gave him a defective computer quite deliberately, not one that was defective enough to make the ship unmaneuverable, but certainly one that was insufficiently agile to aid him in following a multiple jump. Yet Compor managed that without trouble.
I see there's a great deal you don't tell me, Mayor, until you decide you ought to.
I only keep these matters from you, Leono, that it will not hurt you not to know. I admire you, and I use you, but there are sharp limits to my trust, as there is in yours for me. And please don't bother to deny it.
I won't, said Cadell dryly. And some day, Mayor, I will take the liberty of reminding you of that. Meanwhile, is there anything else that I ought to know now? What is the nature of the ship that stopped them? Surely if Compor is Second Foundation, so is that ship.
It is always a pleasure to speak to you, Leono. You see things quickly. The Second Foundation, you see, doesn't bother to hide its tracks. It has defenses that it relies on to make those tracks invisible, even when they are not.
It would never occur to a second Foundationer to use a ship of alien manufacture, even if they knew how neatly we could identify the origin of a ship from the pattern of its energy use. They could always remove that knowledge from any mind that had gained it, so why bother taking the trouble to hide? Well, our scout ship was able to determine the origin of the ship that approached Kompor within minutes of sighting it.
And now the Second Foundation will wipe that knowledge from our minds, I suppose.
If they can, said Brano. But they may find that things have changed.
Codell said, Earlier, you said you knew where the Second Foundation was. You would take care of Gaia first, then Trantor. I deduce from this that the other ship was of Trantorian origin.
You suppose correctly. Are you surprised?
Codell shook his head slowly. Not in hindsight. Ebling Miss, Torren Dorel, and Beta Dorel were all on Trantor during the period when the mule was stopped. Arcade Dorel, Beta's granddaughter, was born on Trantor, and it was on Trantor again when the Second Foundation was itself supposedly stopped. In her account of events, there is a Preem Palver who played a key role, appearing at convenient times, and he was a Trantorian traitor. I should think it was obvious that the Second Foundation was on Trantor, where, incidentally, Harry Seldon himself lived at the time he founded both foundations.
Quite obvious. Except that no one ever suggested the possibility. The Second Foundation saw to that. It is what I meant when I said they didn't have to cover their tracks, when they could so easily arrange to have no one look in the direction of those tracks, or wipe out the memory of those tracks after they had been seen.
Codell said, In that case, let us not look too quickly in the direction in which they may simply be wanting us to look. How is it, do you suppose, that Treviz was able to decide the Second Foundation existed? Why didn't the Second Foundation stop him?
Brano held up her gnarled fingers and counted on them. First, Treviz is a very unusual man, who, for all his obstreperous inability to use caution, has something about him that I have not been able to penetrate. He may be a special case. The Second Galactic Empire, worked out after the fashion of Trantor, will be a paternalistic empire, established by calculation, maintained by calculation, and in perpetual living death by calculation. It will be a dead end. That is the view of Gaia.
Treviz said, And what does Gaia have to offer as an alternative?
Greater Gaia. Galaxia. Every inhabited planet is alive as Gaia. Every living planet combined into a still greater hyperspatial life. Every uninhabited planet participating, every star, every scrap of interstellar gas, perhaps even the great central black hole. A living galaxy, and one that can be made favorable for all life in ways that we yet cannot foresee. A way of life fundamentally different from all that has gone before, and repeating none of the old mistakes.
Originating new ones, muttered Jendebal sarcastically.
We have had thousands of years of Gaia to work those out.
But not on a galactic scale. Treviz, ignoring the short exchange and driving to his point, said, And what is my role in all this?
The voice of Gaia, channeled through Novi's mind, thundered, Choose! Which alternative is it to be?
There was a vast silence that followed. And finally, in that silence, Treviz's voice, mental at last, for he was too taken aback to speak, sounded small and still defiant.
Why me?
Novi said,
Though we recognized the moment had come when either Terminus or Trantor would become too powerful to stop, or worse yet, when both might become so powerful that a deadly stalemate would develop that would devastate the galaxy, we still could not move. For our purposes, we needed someone, a particular someone, with the talent for rightness. We found you, Councilman. No, we cannot take the credit. The people of Trantor found you through the man named Kompor, though even they did not know what they had. The act of finding you attracted our attention to you. Golan Treviz, you have the gift of knowing the right thing to do.
I deny it, said Treviz.
You are, every once in a while, sure. And we want you to be sure this time on behalf of the galaxy. You do not wish the responsibility, perhaps. You may do your best not to have to choose. Nevertheless, you will realize that it is right to do so. You will be sure, and you will then choose. Once we found you, we knew the search was over, and for years we have labored to encourage a course of action that would, without direct mentalic interference, so influence events that all three of you, Mayor Brano, Speaker Jendebal, and Councilman Treviz, will be in the neighborhood of Gaia at the same time. We have done it.
Treviz said, At this point in space, under present circumstances, is it not true, Gaia, if that is what you want me to call you, that you can overpower both the mayor and the speaker? Is it not true that you can establish this living galaxy you speak of without my doing anything? Why, then, do you not?
Nubby said, I do not know if I can explain this to your satisfaction. Gaia was formed thousands of years ago with the help of robots that once, for a brief time, served the human species and now serve them no more. They made it quite clear to us that we could survive only by a strict application of the three laws of robotics as applied to life generally. The first law, in those terms, is Gaia may not harm life or, through inaction, allow life to come to harm. We have followed this rule through all of our history, and we can do no other. The result is that we are now helpless. We cannot force our vision of the living galaxy upon a quintillion human beings and countless other forms of life, and perhaps do harm to vast numbers. Nor can we do nothing and watch the galaxy half destroy itself in a struggle that we might have prevented. We do not know whether action or inaction will cost the galaxy less. Nor, if we choose action, do we know whether supporting Terminus or Trantor will cost the galaxy less. Let Councilman Trevise decide, then, and whatever that decision is, Gaia will follow it.
Trevise said,
How do you expect me to make a decision? What do I do?
Nobi said,
You have your computer. The people of Terminus did not know that when they made it better than they knew. The computer on board your ship incorporates some of Gaia. Place your hands on the terminals and think. You may think Mayor Branno's shield impervious, for instance. If you do, it is possible that she will at once use her weapons to disable or destroy the other two ships, establish physical rule over Gaia, and later on, Trantor.
And you will do nothing to stop that? Said Trevise with astonishment.
Not a thing. If you are sure that domination by Terminus will do the galaxy less harm than any other alternative, we will gladly help that domination along, even at the cost of our own destruction. On the other hand, you may find Speaker Genderball's mentalic field, and you may then join your computer-magnified push to his. He will, in that case, surely break free of me and push me back. He may then adjust the mayor's mind, and in combination with her ships, establish physical domination over Gaia and assure the continued supremacy of the Selden plan. Gaia will not move to stop that. Or you may find my mentalic field and join that, and then the living galaxy will be set in motion to reach its fulfillment, not in this generation or the next, but after centuries of labor, during which the Selden plan will continue. The choice is yours.
Mayor Branno said,
Wait, do not make a decision just yet. May I speak?
Nobi said, You may speak freely. So may Speaker Genderball.
Branno said, Councilman Trevise, the last time we met on Terminus, you said, The time may come, Madam Mayor, when you will ask me for an effort, and I will then do as I choose, and I will remember the past 2 days. I don't know whether you foresaw this, or intuitively felt it would happen, or simply had what this woman who speaks of a living galaxy calls a talent for rightness. In any case, you are right. I am asking you for an effort on behalf of the Federation. You may, I suppose, feel that you would like to even the score with me for having arrested and exiled you. I ask you to remember that I did it for what I considered the good of the Foundation Federation. Even if I were wrong, or even if I acted out of callous self-interest, remember that it was I who did it, and not the Federation. Do not now destroy the entire Federation out of a desire to balance what I alone have done to you. Remember that you are a Foundationer and a human being, that you do not want to be a cipher in the plans of the bloodless mathematicians of Trantor, or less than a cipher in a galactic mishmash of life and non-life. You want yourself, your descendants, your fellow people, to be independent organisms, possessing free will. Nothing else matters. These others may tell you that our empire will lead to bloodshed and misery, but it need not. It is our free will choice whether this should be so or not. We may choose otherwise. And, in any case, it is better to go to defeat with free will than to live in meaningless security as a cog in a machine. Observe that you are now being asked to make a decision as a free will human being. These things of Gaia are unable to make a decision because their machinery will not allow them to, so that they depend on you. And they will destroy themselves if you bid them to. Is this what you want for all the galaxy?
Trevise said, I do not know that I have free will, Mayor. My mind may have been subtly dealt with, so that I will give the answer that is desired.
Nobi said, Your mind is totally untouched. If we could bring ourselves to adjust you to suit our purposes, this whole meeting would be unnecessary. Were we that unprincipled, we could have proceeded with what we would find most pleasing to ourselves, with no concern for the greater needs and good of humanity as a whole.
Genderball said, I believe it is my turn to speak. Councilman Trevise, do not be guided by narrow parochialism. The fact that you are Terminus-born should not lead you to believe that Terminus comes before the galaxy. For 5 centuries now, the galaxy has been operating in accordance with the Selden Plan. In and out of the Foundation Federation, that operation has been proceeding. You are and have been part of the Selden Plan, above and beyond your lesser role as Foundationer. do not do anything to disrupt the plan, either on behalf of a narrow concept of patriotism or out of a romantic longing for the new and untried. The Second Foundationers will in no way hamper the free will of humanity. We are guides, not despots. And we offer a second galactic empire fundamentally different from the first. Throughout human history, no decade in all the tens of thousands of years during which hyperspatial travel has existed has been completely free of bloodshed and violent death throughout the galaxy, even in those periods when the Foundation itself was at peace. Choose Mayor Brano, and that will continue endlessly into the future, the same dreary, deadly round. The Selden Plan offers release from that at last, and not at the price of becoming one more atom in a galaxy of atoms being reduced to equality with grass, bacteria, and dust. Nobi said,
"What Speaker Jendabal says of the First Foundation Second Empire, I agree with. What he says of his own, I do not. The speakers of Trantor are, after all, independent, free-will human beings, and are the same as they have always been. Are they free of destructive competition, of politics, of clawing upward at all costs? Are there no quarrels and even hatreds at the speaker's table? And will they always be guides you dare follow? Put Speaker Jendabal on his honor and ask him this."
"No need to put me on my honor," said Jendabal. "I freely admit we have our hatreds, competitions, and betrayals at the table. But once a decision is reached, it is obeyed by all. There has never been an exception to this."
Treviz said, "What if I will not make a choice?"
"You must," says Novi. "You will know that it is right to do so, and you will therefore make a choice."
"What if I try to make a choice and cannot?"
"You must."
Treviz said, "How much time do I have?"
Novi said, "Until you are sure, however much time that takes."
Treviz sat silently.
Though the others were silent, too, it seemed to Treviz that he could hear the pulsing of his bloodstream. He could hear Mayor Brano's voice say firmly, "Free will." Speaker Jendabal's voice said peremptorily, "Guidance and peace." Novi's voice said wistfully, "Life."
Treviz turned and found Pellerat looking at him intently. He said, "Janoff, have you heard all this?"
"Yes, I have, Golan."
"What do you think?"
"The decision is not mine."
"I know that, but what do you think?"
"I don't know. I am frightened by all three alternatives. And yet, a peculiar thought comes to me."
"Yes?"
"When we first went out into space, you showed me the galaxy, do you remember?"
"Of course."
"You speeded time, and the galaxy rotated visibly. And I said, as though anticipating this very time, the galaxy looks like a living thing crawling through space. Do you think that, in a way, it is alive already?"
And Treviz, remembering that moment, was suddenly sure. He remembered suddenly his feeling that Pellerat, too, would have a vital role to play. He turned in haste, anxious not to have time to think, to doubt, to grow uncertain. He placed his hands on the terminals and thought with an intensity he had never known before. He had made his decision, the decision on which the fate of the galaxy hung. Chapter 20. Conclusion. 88. Mayor Harla Brano had every reason for satisfaction. The state visit had not lasted long, but it had been thoroughly productive. She said, as though in deliberate attempt to avoid Ubri,
"We can't, of course, trust them completely."
She was watching the screen. The ships of the fleet were one by one entering hyperspace and returning to their normal stations. There was no question but that Seychelles had been impressed by their presence, but they could not have failed to notice two things. One, that the ships had remained in Foundation space at all times. Two, that once Brano had indicated they would leave, they were indeed leaving with celerity. On the other hand, Seychelles would not forget either that those ships could be recalled to the border at a day's notice, or less. It was a maneuver that had combined both a demonstration of power and a demonstration of goodwill. Codel said, "Quite right. We can't trust them completely. But then, no one in the galaxy can be trusted completely, and it is in the self-interest of Seychelles to observe the terms of the agreement. We have been generous."
Brano said, "A lot will depend on working out the details, and I predict that will take months. The general brushstrokes can be accepted in a moment, but then come the shadings. Just how we arrange for quarantine of imports and exports, how we weigh the value of their grain and cattle compared to ours, and so on."
"I know, but it will be done eventually, and the credit will be yours, Mayor. It was a bold stroke, and one, I admit, whose wisdom I doubted."
"Come, Leono, it was just a matter of the Foundation recognizing Seychellian pride. They've retained a certain independence since early imperial times. It's to be admired, actually."
"Yes, now that it will no longer inconvenience us."
"Exactly. So it was only necessary to bend our pride to the point of making some sort of gesture to theirs.
I admit it took an effort to decide that I, as mayor of a galaxy-straddling federation, should condescend to visit a provincial star grouping. But once the decision was made, it didn't hurt too much, and it pleased them. We had to gamble that they would agree to the visit once we moved our ships to the border, but it meant being humble and smiling very broadly.
Goodell nodded. We abandoned the appearance of power to preserve the essence of it.
Exactly. Who first said that?
I believe it was in one of Eridan's plays, but I'm not sure. We can ask one of our literary lights back home.
If I remember. We must speed the return visit of Seychellians to Terminus and see to it that they are given the full treatment as equals. And I'm afraid, Leono, you will have to organize tight security for them. There is bound to be some indignation among our hotheads, and it would not be wise to subject them to even slight and trenchant humiliation through protest demonstrations.
Absolutely, said Codell. It was a clever stroke, by the way, sending out Trevise.
My lightning rod? He worked better than I thought he would, to be honest. He blundered his way into Seychelles and drew their lightning in the form of protests with a speed I could not have believed. Space! What an excellent excuse that made for my visit. Concern lest a Foundation National in any way disturb them, and gratitude for their forbearance.
Shrewd. You don't think it would have been better, though, to have brought Trevise back with us?
No. On the whole, I prefer him anywhere but at home. He would be a disturbing factor on Terminus. His nonsense about the Second Foundation served as the perfect excuse for sending him out, and of course we counted on Pellerat to lead him to Seychelles. But I don't want him back, continuing to spread the nonsense. We can never tell what that might lead to.
Goodell chuckled. I doubt that we can ever find anyone more gullible than an intellectual academic. I wonder how much Pellerat would have swallowed if we had encouraged him.
Belief in the literal existence of the mythical Seychellian Gaia was quite enough. But forget it. We will have to face the Council when we return, and we will need their votes for the Seychellian Treaty. Fortunately, we have Trevise's statement, voice print and all, to the effect that he left Terminus voluntarily. I will offer official regrets as to Trevise's brief arrest, and that will satisfy the Council.
I can rely on you for the soft soap, Mayor, said Codell dryly. Have you considered, though, that Trevise may continue to search for the Second Foundation?
Let him, said Brano, shrugging. As long as he doesn't do it on Terminus, it'll keep him busy and get him nowhere. The Second Foundation's continued existence is our myth of the century, as Gaia is Seychelles' myth. She leaned back and looked positively genial. And now we have Seychelles in our grip, and by the time they see that, it'll be too late for them to break the grip. So the Foundation's growth continues, and will continue, smoothly and regularly.
And the credit will be entirely yours, Mayor.
That has not escaped my notice, said Brano. And their ship slipped into hyperspace and reappeared in the neighborhood space of Terminus.
89.
Speaker Store Gendebal, on his own ship again, had every reason for satisfaction. The encounter with the First Foundation had not lasted long, but it had been thoroughly productive. He had sent back his message of carefully muted triumph. It was only necessary, for the moment, to let the first speaker know that all had gone well, as indeed he might guess from the fact that the general force of the Second Foundation had never had to be used after all. The details could come later on. He would describe how a careful and very minor adjustment to Mayor Brano's mind had turned her thoughts from imperialistic grandiosity to the practicality of commercial treaty, how a careful and rather long-distance adjustment of the leader of the Seychelles Union had led to an invitation to the mayor of a parley, and how, thereafter, a rapprochement had been reached with no further adjustments at all, with Campor returning to Terminus on his own ship to see that the agreement would be kept. It had been, Gendebal thought complacently, almost a storybook example of large results brought about by minutely crafted mentalics. It would, he was sure, squash Speaker Delarmy flat, and bring about his own elevation to first speaker very soon after the presentation of the details at a formal meeting of the table. And he did not deny to himself the importance of Surinobi's presence, though that would not need to be stressed to the speakers generally. Not only had she been essential to his victory, but she gave him the excuse he now needed for indulging his childish, and very human, for even speakers are very human, need to exult before what he knew to be a guaranteed admiration. She did not understand anything that had happened, he knew, but she was aware that he had arranged matters to his liking, and she was bursting with pride over that. He caressed the smoothness of her mind and felt the warmth of that pride. He said,
I could not have done it without you, Nobi. It was because of you I could tell that the First Foundation, that the people on the large ship...
Yes, Master, I know whom you mean.
I could tell, because of you, that they had a shield, together with weak powers of the mind. From the effect on your mind, I could tell exactly the characteristics of both. I could tell how most efficiently to penetrate the one and deflect the other.
Nobby said tentatively. I do not understand exactly what it is you say, Master, but I would have done much more to help if I could.
I know that, Nobby, but what you did was enough. It's amazing how dangerous they might have been. But caught now, before either their shield or their field had been developed more strongly, they could be stopped. The mayor goes back now, the shield and the field forgotten, satisfied over the fact that she has obtained a commercial treaty with Seychelles that'll make it a working part of the Federation. I don't deny that there is much more to do to dismantle the work they have done on shield and field. It is something concerning which we have been remiss, but it will be done.
He brooded about the matter and went on in a lower voice. We took far too much for granted with the First Foundation. We must place them under closer supervision. We must knit the galaxy closer together somehow. We must make use of mentalics to build a closer cooperation of consciousness.
That would fit the plan. I'm convinced of that, and I'll see to it.
Nobby said anxiously, Master? Jandebol smiled suddenly. I'm sorry, I'm talking to myself. Nobby, do you remember Rufirant?
That bone-scored farmer who attacked you? I should say I do.
I'm convinced that First Foundation agents armed with personal shields arranged that, together with all the other anomalies that have plagued us. Imagine being blind to a thing like that. But then, I was bemused into overlooking the First Foundation altogether by this myth of a mysterious world, this Seychellian superstition concerning Gaia. There, too, your mind came in handy. It helped me determine that the source of that mentalic field was the warship and nothing else. He rubbed his hands.
Nobby said timidly, Master?
Yes, Nobby.
Will you not be rewarded for what you have done?
Indeed, I will. Chandis will retire, and I will be first speaker. Then will come my chance to make us an active factor in revolutionizing the galaxy.
First speaker?
Yes, Nobby. I will be the most important and the most powerful scholar of them all.
The most important?
She looked woebegone.
Why do you make a face, Nobby? Don't you want me to be rewarded?
Yes, Master, I do. But if you are the most important scholar of them all, you will not want a Hamish woman near you. It would not be fitting.
Won't I, though? Who will stop me?
He felt a gush of affection for her. Novi, you'll stay with me wherever I go and whatever I am. Do you think I would risk dealing with some of the wolves we occasionally have at the table without your mind always there to tell me, even before they know themselves, what their emotions might be? Your own innocent, absolutely smooth mind.
Besides, he seemed startled by a sudden revelation. Even aside from that, I like having you with me, and I intend having you with me. That is, if you're willing.
Oh, Master,
whispered Novi, and as his arm moved around her waist, her head sank to his shoulder.
Deep within, where the enveloping mind of Novi could scarcely be aware of it, the essence of Gaia remained and guided events. But it was that impenetrable mask that made the continuance of the great task possible. And that mask, the one that belonged to a Hamish woman, was completely happy. It was so happy that Novi was almost reconciled for the distance she was from herself, them all. And she was content to be, for the indefinite future, what she seemed to be. 90. Pellerat rubbed his hands and said with carefully controlled enthusiasm, How glad I am to be back on Gaia. Said Trevise abstractedly. You know what Bliss has told me? The mayor is going back to Terminus with a commercial treaty with Seychelles. The speaker from the Second Foundation is going back to Trentor, convinced that he has arranged it.
And that woman Novi is going with him to see that the changes that will bring about Galaxia are initiated.
And neither Foundation is in the least aware that Gaia exists. It's absolutely amazing.
I know, said Trevise. I was told all this, too. But we know that Gaia exists, and we can talk.
Bliss doesn't think so. She says no one would believe us, and we would know that. Besides, I, for one, have no intention of ever leaving Gaia.
Trevise was pulled out of his inner musing. He looked up and said, What?
I'm going to stay here. You know, I can't believe it. Just weeks ago, I was living a lonely life on Terminus, the same life I had lived for decades, immersed in my records and my thoughts, and never dreaming anything but that I would go to my death, whenever it might be, still immersed in my records and my thoughts, and still living my lonely life, contentedly vegetating. Then, suddenly and unexpectedly, I become a galactic traveler. I was involved with a galactic crisis, and, do not laugh, Golan, I have found Bliss.
I'm not laughing, Janov, said Trevise. But are you sure you know what you're doing?
Oh, yes. This matter of Earth is no longer important to me. The fact that it was the only world with a diverse ecology and with intelligent life has been adequately explained. The Eternals, you know.
Yes, I know. And you're going to stay on Gaia?
Absolutely. Earth is the past, and I'm tired of the past. Gaia is the future. You're not part of Gaia, Janoff. Or do you think you can become part of it? Bliss says that I can become somewhat a part of it, intellectually, if not biologically. She'll help, of course. But since she is part of it, how can you two find a common life, a common point of view, a common interest? They were in the open, and Trevise looked gravely at the quiet, fruitful island, and beyond it the sea, and on the horizon, purpled by distance, another island, all of it peaceful, civilized, alive, and a unit. He said, "Janoff, she is a world. You are a tiny individual. What if she gets tired of you? She is young. Golan, I've thought of that. I've thought of nothing but that for days. I expect her to grow tired of me. I'm no romantic idiot. But whatever she gives me till then will be enough. She has already given me enough. I have received more from her than I dreamed existed in life. If I saw her no more from this moment on, I have ended the winter." "I don't believe it," said Trevise gently. "I think you are a romantic idiot, and mind you, I wouldn't want you any other way. Janoff, we haven't known each other for long, but we've been together every moment for weeks, and, I'm sorry if it sounds silly, I like you a great deal." "And I you, Golan," said Pellerat.
"And I don't want you hurt. I must talk to Bliss."
"No, no, please don't. You'll lecture her."
"I won't lecture her. It's not entirely to do with you, and I want to talk to her privately."
"Please, Janoff, I don't want to do it behind your back. So grant me your willingness to have me talk to her and get a few things straight. If I'm satisfied, I will give you my heartiest congratulations and goodwill, and I will forever hold my peace, whatever happens."
Pellerat shook his head.
"You'll ruin things."
"I promise I won't. I beg you."
"Well, but do be careful, my dear fellow, won't you?"
"You have my solemn word." 91.
Bliss said, "Pell says you want to see me."
Trevise said, "Yes."
They were indoors, in the small apartment allotted to him. She sat down gracefully, crossed her legs, and looked up at him shrewdly, her beautiful brown eyes luminous and her long, dark hair glistening. She said,
"You disapprove of me, don't you? You have disapproved of me from the start."
Trevise remained standing. He said, "You are aware of minds and of their contents. You know what I think of you and why."
Slowly, Bliss shook her head.
"Your mind is out of bounds to Gaia. You know that. Your decision was needed, and it had to be the decision of a clear and untouched mind. When your ship was first taken, I placed you and Pell within a soothing field, but that was essential. You would have been damaged, and perhaps rendered useless for a crucial time by panic or rage, and that was all. I could never go beyond that, and I haven't, so I don't know what you're thinking."
Trevise said, "The decision I had to make has been made. I decided in favor of Gaia and Galaxia. Why, then, all this talk of a clear and untouched mind? You have what you want, and you can do with me now as you wish."
"Not at all, Treff. There are other decisions that may be needed in the future. You remain what you are, and, while you are alive, you are a rare natural resource of the galaxy. Undoubtedly, there are others like you in the galaxy, and others like you will appear in the future. But for now, we know of you, and only you. We still cannot touch you."
Trevise considered. "You are Gaia. And I don't want to talk to Gaia. I want to talk to you as an individual, if that has any meaning at all."
"It has meaning. We are far from existing in a common melt. I can block off Gaia for a period of time."
"Yes," said Trevise, "I think you can. Have you now done so?"
"I have now done so."
"Then first, let me tell you that you have played games. You did not enter my mind to influence my decision, perhaps, but you certainly entered Janoff's mind to do so, didn't you?"
"Do you think I did?"
"I think you did. At the crucial moment, Pellerat reminded me of his own vision of the galaxy as alive, and the thought drove me on to make my decision at that moment. The thought may have been his, but yours was the mind that triggered it, was it not?" Bliss said,
"The thought was in his mind, but there were many thoughts there. I smoothed the path before that reminiscence of his about the living galaxy, and not before any other thought of his. That particular thought, therefore, slipped easily out of his consciousness and into words. Mind you, I did not create the thought. It was there."
"Nevertheless, that amounted to an indirect tampering with the perfect independence of my decision, did it not?"
"Gaia felt it necessary."
"Did it? Well, it may make you feel better, or nobler, to know that although Janoff's remark persuaded me to make the decision at that moment, it was the decision I think I would have made even if he had said nothing, or if he had tried to argue me into a decision of a different kind. I want you to know that."
"I am relieved," said Bliss coolly. "Is that what you wanted to tell me when you asked to see me?"
"No."
"What else is there?"
Now Trevise sat down in a chair he had drawn opposite her so that their knees nearly touched. He leaned toward her. When we approached Gaev, it was you on the space station. It was you who trapped us, you who came out to get us. You who have remained with us ever since, except for the meal with Dome, which you did not share with us. In particular, it was you on the far star with us when the decision was made. Always you.
I am Gaia.
That does not explain it. A rabbit is Gaia. A pebble is Gaia. Everything on the planet is Gaia, but they are not all equally Gaia. Some are more equal than others. Why you?
Why do you think?
Trevise made the plunge. He said, because I don't think you're Gaia. I think you're more than Gaia. Bliss made a derisive sound with her lips. Trevise kept to his course. At the time I was making the decision, the woman with the speaker,
he called her Novi.
This Novi, then, said that Gaia was set on its course by the robots that no longer exist, and that Gaia was taught to follow a version of the three laws of robotics.
That is quite true.
And the robots no longer exist.
So Novi said.
So Novi did not say. I remember her exact words. She said, Gaia was formed thousands of years ago with the help of robots that once, for a brief time, served the human species and now serve them no more.
Well, Trev, doesn't that mean they exist no more?
No, it means they serve no more. Might they not rule instead?
Ridiculous!
Or supervise? Why were you there at the time of the decision? You did not seem to be essential. It was Novi who conducted matters, and she was Gaia. What need of you, unless...
Well... Unless?
Unless you are the supervisor, whose role it is to make certain that Gaia does not forget the three laws. Unless you are a robot, so cleverly made that you cannot be told from a human being.
If I cannot be told from a human being, how is it you think that you can tell?
Asked Bliss with a trace of sarcasm. Trevise sat back. Do you not all assure me I have the faculty of being sure, of making decisions, seeing solutions, drawing correct conclusions? I don't claim this. It is what you say of me. Well, from the moment I saw you, I felt uneasy. There was something wrong with you. I am certainly as susceptible to feminine allure as Pellerad is. More so, I should think. And you are an attractive woman in appearance. Yet not for one moment did I feel the slightest attraction.
You devastate me.
Trevise ignored that. He said, when you first appeared on our ship, Genoff and I had been discussing the possibility of a non-human civilization on Gaia, and when Genoff saw you, he asked in his innocence, are you human? Perhaps a robot must answer the truth, but I suppose it can be evasive. You merely said, don't I look human? Yes, you look human, Bliss, but let me ask you again, are you human? Bliss said nothing, and Trevise continued. I think that even at that first moment, I felt you were not a woman. You are a robot, and I could somehow tell. And because of my feeling, all the events that followed had meaning for me, particularly your absence from the dinner. Bliss said,
do you think I cannot eat, Trev? Have you forgotten I nibbled a shrimp dish on your ship? I assure you that I am able to eat and perform any of the other biological functions, including, before you ask, sex. And yet, that in itself, I might as well tell you, does not prove that I am not a robot. Robots had reached the pitch of perfection even thousands of years ago, where only by their brains were they distinguishable from human beings, and then only by those able to handle mentalic fields. Speaker Gendaval might have been able to tell whether I were robot or human, if he had bothered even once to consider me. Of course he did not.
Yet though I am without mentalics, I am nevertheless convinced you are a robot. Bliss said,
but what if I am? I admit nothing, but I am curious. What if I am?
You have no need to admit anything. I know you are a robot. If I needed a last bit of evidence, it was your calm assurance that you could block off Gaia and speak to me as an individual. I don't think you could do that if you were part of Gaia, but you are not. You are a robot supervisor, and therefore outside of Gaia. I wonder, come to think of it, how many robot supervisors Gaia requires and possesses.
I repeat, I admit nothing, but I am curious. What if I am a robot?
In that case, what I want to know is, what do you want of Genoff Pellerat? He is my friend, and he is, in some ways, a child. He thinks he loves you. He thinks he wants only what you are willing to give, and that you have already given him enough. He doesn't know, and cannot conceive, the pain of the loss of love, or, for that matter, the peculiar pain of knowing that you are not human.
Do you know the pain of lost love?
I have had my moments. I have not led the sheltered life of Genoff. I have not had my life consumed and anesthetized by an intellectual pursuit that swallowed up everything else, even wife and child. He has. Now, suddenly, he gives it all up for you. I do not want him hurt. I will not have him hurt. If I have served Gaia, I deserve a reward. And my reward is your assurance that Genoff Pellaret's well-being will be preserved.
Shall I pretend I am a robot and answer you?
Trevise said, yes, and right now.
Very well, then. Suppose I am a robot, Trev, and suppose I am in a position of supervision. Suppose there are a few, a very few, who have a similar role to myself, and suppose we rarely meet. Suppose that our driving force is the need to care for human beings, and suppose there are no true human beings on Gaia because all are part of an overall planetary being. Suppose that it fulfills us to care for Gaia, but not entirely. Suppose there is something primitive in us that longs for a human being in the sense that existed when robots were first formed and designed. Don't mistake me. I do not claim to be age-old, assuming I am a robot. I am as old as I told you I was, or at least, assuming I am a robot, that has been the term of my existence. Still, assuming I am a robot, my fundamental design would be as it always was, and I would long to care for a true human being. Pell is a human being. He is not part of Gaia. He is too old to ever become a true part of Gaia. He wants to stay on Gaia with me, for he does not have the feelings about me that you have. He does not think that I am a robot. Well, I want him, too. If you assume that I am a robot, you see that I would. I am capable of all human reactions, and I would love him. If you were to insist I was a robot, you might not consider me capable of love in some mystic human sense, but you would not be able to distinguish my reactions from that which you would call love. So what difference would it make?
She stopped and looked at him, intransigently proud. Trevise said, "You're telling me that you would not abandon him?"
If you assume that I am a robot, then you can see for yourself that by first law I could never abandon him unless he ordered me to do so, and I were, in addition, convinced that he meant it, and that I would be hurting him more by staying than by leaving.
Would not a younger man?
What younger man? You are a younger man, but I do not conceive you as needing me in the same sense that Pell does, and in fact, you do not want me, so that the first law would prevent me from attempting to cling to you.
Not me, another younger man.
There is no other. Who is there on Gaia other than Pell and yourself that would qualify as human beings in the non-Gaian sense?
Trevise said more softly, "And if you are not a robot?"
"Make up your mind,"
said Bliss. "I say, if you are not a robot."
"Then I say that in that case you have no right to say anything at all. It is for myself and for Pell to decide."
Trev said, "Then I return to my first point. I want my reward, and that reward is that you will treat him well. I won't press the point of your identity. Simply assure me, as one intelligence to another, that you will treat him well." And Bliss said softly,
"I will treat him well. Not as a reward to you, but because I wish to. It is my earnest desire. I will treat him well."
She called,
"Pell!"
And again,
"Pell!"
Pellaret entered from outside.
"Guess, Bliss?"
Bliss held out her hand to him.
"I think Trev wants to say something."
Pellaret took her hand, and Trevise then took the doubled hand in his too. "Genoff," he said, "I am happy for both of you." Pellaret said,
"Oh, my dear fellow!"
Trevise said, "I will probably be leaving Gaia. I go now to speak to Dome about that. I don't know when or if we will meet again, Genoff, but in any case, we did well together."
"We did well,"
said Pellaret, smiling. "Goodbye, Bliss. And in advance, thank you."
"Goodbye, Trev."
And Trevise, with a wave of his hand, left the house. 92. Dome said,
"You did well, Trev, but then you did as I thought you would."
They were once more sitting over a meal, as unsatisfactory as the first had been. But Trevise did not mind. He might not be eating on Gaia again. He said, "I did as I thought you would, but not perhaps for the reason you thought I would."
"Surely you were sure of the correctness of your decision."
"Yes, I was, but not because of any mystic grip I have on certainty. If I chose Galaxia, it was through ordinary reasoning, the sort of reasoning that anyone else might have used to come to a decision. Would you care to have me explain?"
"I most certainly would, Trev."
Trevise said, "There were three things I might have done. I might have joined the First Foundation, or joined the Second Foundation, or joined Gaia. If I had joined the First Foundation, Mayor Brano would have taken immediate action to establish domination over the Second Foundation and over Gaia. If I had joined the second foundation, Speaker Jendabal would have taken immediate action to establish domination over the first foundation and over Gaia. In either case, what would have taken place would have been irreversible, and if either were the wrong solution, it would have been irreversibly catastrophic. If I joined with Gaia, however, then the first foundation and the second foundation would each have been left with the conviction of having won a relatively minor victory. All would then have continued as before, since the building of Galaxia, I had already been told, would take generations, even centuries. Joining with Gaia was my way of temporizing then, and of making sure that there would remain time to modify matters, or even reverse them, if my decision were wrong. Dome raised his eyebrows. His old, almost cadaverous face remained otherwise expressionless. He said in his piping voice,
"And is it your opinion that your decision may turn out wrong?"
Treves shrugged. "I don't think so. But there is one thing I must do in order that I might know. It is my intention to visit Earth, if I can find that world."
"We will certainly not stop you if you wish to leave us, Trev."
"I do not fit on your world."
"No more than Pell does. Yet you are as welcome to remain as he is. Still, we will not hold you. But tell me, why do you wish to visit Earth?"
Treves said, "I rather think you understand."
"I do not."
"There is a piece of information you withheld from me, Dome. Perhaps you had your reasons, but I wish you had not." Dome said,
"I do not follow you."
"Look, Dome, in order to make my decision, I used my computer, and for a brief moment I found myself in touch with the minds of those about me, Mayor Brano, Speaker Jendabal, Novi. I caught glimpses of a number of matters that, in isolation, meant little to me, as, for example, the various effects Gaia, through Novi, had produced on Trantor, effects that were intended to maneuver the Speaker into going to Gaia."
"Yes."
"And one of those things was the clearing from Trantor's library of all references to Earth."
"The clearing of references to Earth?"
"Exactly. So Earth must be important. And not only does it appear that the Second Foundation must know nothing about it, but that I must not either. And if I am to take the responsibility for the direction of galactic development, I do not willingly accept ignorance. Would you consider telling me why it was so important to keep knowledge of Earth hidden?"
Dome said solemnly, "Trev, Gaia knows nothing about such clearance. Nothing."
"Are you telling me that Gaia is not responsible?"
"It is not responsible."
Treves thought for a while, the tip of his tongue moving slowly and meditatively over his lips. "Who was responsible then?"
"I don't know. I can see no purpose in it."
The two men stared at each other, and then Dome said,
"You are right. We had seemed to have reached a most satisfactory conclusion, but while this point remains unsettled, we dare not rest. Stay a while with us, and let us see what we can reason out. Then you can leave with our full help."
"Thank you," said Treves. The end, for now. Afterward, by the author. This book, while self-contained, is a continuation of the Foundation trilogy, which is made up of three books, Foundation, Foundation and Empire, and Second Foundation. In addition, there are other books I have written which, while not dealing with the Foundations directly, are set in what we might call the Foundation universe. Thus, the events in The Stars Like Dust and The Currents of Space take place in the years when Trantor was expanding toward Empire, while the events in Pebble in the Sky take place when the first galactic empire was at the height of its power. In Pebble, Earth is central, and some of the material in it is alluded to tangentially in this new book. In none of the earlier books of the Foundation universe were robots mentioned. In this new book, however, there are references to robots. In this connection, you may wish to read my robot stories. The short stories are to be found in The Complete Robot, while the two novels, The Caves of Steel and The Naked Sun, describe the robotic period of the colonization of the galaxy. If you wish an account of the Eternals and the way in which they adjusted human history, you will find it, not entirely consistent with the references in this new book, in The End of Eternity. All the books mentioned existed as Doubleday hardcovers to begin with. The Foundation trilogy and The Complete Robot are still in print and hardcover. Of the others, Pebble in the Sky and The End of Eternity are included in the omnibus volume The Far Ends of Time and Earth, while The Stars Like Dust and The Currents of Space are in the omnibus volume Prisoners of the Stars. Both omnibus volumes are in print and hardcover. As for The Caves of Steel and The Naked Sun, they are included in the omnibus volume The Robot Novels, still available from the Science Fiction Book Club. And all are in print in softcover editions, of course. This concludes the reading of Foundation's Edge by Isaac Asimov.
This book was read by Larry McKeever.
Prelude to Foundation by Isaac Asimov. Copyright 1988 by Nightfall Incorporated. This book is read by Larry A. McKeever. This book consists of 94 chapters and is 434 pages long. The following material appears on the dust jacket of the book.